Hello, welcome to the Creative Weirdos podcast, where I talk to new and old friends about creative and weird stuff. And today I have the pleasure of talking to a new friend, Courtney, better known as the Liminal Librarian. Courtney has been a librarian for a long time and loves it, and the passion comes through so strong, and it's just beautiful. We talk about the way libraries can feel like a sacred and safe space and can be a reflection of the community they exist in, as well as offering these social services that are so important and just, you know, portals to access the weird. So we go through all of that and a ton of other stuff. Courtney's also a wonderful author, and I highly recommend checking out any of her writing. We didn't get too much into that because we wandered all over talking about academia and all kinds of different stuff that I've always wanted to ask a librarian and finally had the chance to. So go support all of Courtney's work linked below and give her a follow over on Instagram and enjoy this conversation. I'm sure I'll be having more with her in the future. And until then, enjoy the day and I'll talk to you soon. Bye. Right back into what you were about to say as far as how kids are perceiving and interacting with university and education systems these days.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. We're having such a great conversation, and I was just about to respond to your point and say that I feel like it's so important to like continue the work of dismantling the stereotypes surrounding like what it like the quote shoulds of like life, you know, like everybody said, like you said, you were growing up, you know, you were told like you have to do this, you should do this, you know, and like go to college. And it's like, well, there are so many paths to life, and like so often it like gets very elitist, and it's, I hate that, because it's like I don't know, I just, there's so many ways like to be living like in this world, and intelligence and creativity are so contextual and subjective, and it's not like a list that you check off, you know? And so I also like, I will, you know, try to also remind students of these things as well, or like, you know, young people in my life, like there are so many paths. Success does not automatically mean having to do it this way or going to these institutions. And I think we're getting better at talking about that, but I don't know. I guess, I don't know. I'm hopeful, but cautious about the future of that.
No, I think the narrative is changing, and you're right. Like, we're getting better at talking about it, but we're not necessarily getting better at living by example, if that makes sense. Like, I feel I have this problem all the time with my kids, where I'll be like, I'll do something and tell the kids to stop freaking out and fighting with each other, and then I'll get really frustrated about something and throw something on the floor and throw my own little temper tantrum. I'm like, oh yeah, me telling the kids doesn't matter if I don't act the way that I want them to act. So I feel like culturally we're having these conversations, but we're still kind of stuck in the structure that we kind of came up in. But the conversation and the intention changing is huge, and I think it will lead to the rest of it kind of following suit.
Yeah, I feel the same way that you feel. It's interesting to be like, I work at a university, you know, at a university library, and sometimes I kind of feel like I'm being like counter like cultural to like the whole thing, the whole institution. But I mean, there are reasons why, like, I think the institution of higher education is great, and like my first love has and always will be like libraries. That's how I found my way to university world, not like the other way around. And so it's an interesting thing to be a person in the university system because I see these things and I recognize these things. And it's like you and I were talking about earlier, how do we move forward with like the good parts of it and work on fixing the pieces of the system that are so freaking broken?
Yeah. And how, you know, and, yeah. How much of a conversation is that in academia from your experience? Like, are you, do you feel like an outcast kind of, or like a rebel, like you were saying, with that kind of mentality? Or is there more of an open discussion about it?
I feel like there's an open discussion about it. And I'll put a little asterisk next to that statement. I feel like some people at some institutions feel more empowered to be open and talking about that. I feel like here at my institution, I feel pretty empowered and safe to openly ask those things and talk about those things. But I can also recognize that that's not the case for other people in other, like maybe private, you know, higher education systems or Research One institutions, or I know that some people, you know, in the academy definitely do not feel safe talking about certain things. But here, I think I do feel relatively, empowered to talk about those things. And so, you know, I think it's situational for a lot of people.
Yeah. That makes sense. And how long have you been in, or how long have you been working in the library system? How long has your career been with this?
Ah, okay. I love this question. I got my very first library job when I was 14.
That's amazing.
I worked as just a page at my local public library in my hometown, and I just absolutely loved it. And I worked there all throughout high school and my first like two and a half years of college. And that, like, I realized that their libraries are institutions that foster and support community. And I was like, this is so cool to me that like I can see like the same people every single day, every single week. I can also see somebody once and like, they're passing through, never see them again. I think like it's so cool how library spaces, like the services that they provide, like what other places in society can you go? And like, if you want to sit there all day, nobody's going to bother you. You don't have to pay to be there.
Yeah.
You don't have to, you know, people are not going to like care if you're just like sitting there reading, like nobody's going to bother you.
Such a beautiful service that not to cut you off, but that makes me think of a question as far as like, how have you seen, I love thinking of narratives and these things as cultural reflections, and like, you know, stories are all just like reflections of society, and the library is this building of stories. So obviously, like, I've thought about the library as this reflection of the community that it exists in. How much have you seen that shift in your time? Like, how much of that reflection, like, can you tell, like, thinking back on your however many years since you've been doing this, since you were 14, like, can you think of the people that change as well as, not necessarily like the technology, all that stuff I know changes a lot, but as far as like the library's role as that reflective community mirror, that, like, have you seen that change as its role in society?
I love this question. Yes, I have seen a ton of change happening in libraries, and I think that's a good thing. Like, libraries are really good at change.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like, I mean, especially public libraries. I mean, I started my professional career in public libraries as well. Before transitioning here to academic libraries, I will say the wheels of academia turn a little bit slower, but in general, libraries like are so adaptable. Like, I mean, if we just look at it in terms of like the like physical media and like how that has changed, right? Like, I remember people, you know, sort of like making jokes or sort of flippantly being like, oh my God, like, are books gonna just like go you know, out of style or like, you know, go extinct because we've got like books on tape. Oh my God, books on tape. And then
you've
it's
been
like,
hearing it for that long.
I mean, yes, like, and then it's also just like, oh my God, the internet, the boom of the internet. And like, why do you need a librarian? You just have the internet. I mean, it's just like, libraries have adapted and will continue to adapt and look very different in terms of like physical space and like services. I feel like, in my experience, I've seen so much like social services, you know, like libraries, and that I think started like well before I entered the scene, but like libraries being less about, you know, these quiet warehouses of physical media and more about, you know, places where people can access computers to apply for jobs, to apply for, you know, benefits, to do whatever it is that like you want to do. Spaces for people to meet, like community organizations, you know, to have meetings, to have, you know, book clubs, just like space in general for you, especially like, I can't tell you how many times, like I might be, I remember to put this into context. I remember, in 2018, I had the privilege and opportunity, through a grant that I got to go to Scotland. And, the bus one day was like running like late or something like that. I had like a four or five hour gap of like being dropped off at the station and like waiting for the next, you know, bus or whatever. But there was a little public library nearby. So I walk in with, you know, my suitcase and like whatever, and I go up to the desk and I'm like, hey, I'm just, you know, waiting for the bus. It's like been delayed or whatever. And the librarian was like, well, you know, welcome, whatever. I mean, I always like, as a librarian too, I always like to just sort of go up and chat with other, you know, colleagues in the field. And they were Absolutely. So gracious. And they were like, we can store your suitcase behind the desk. Like, there's a water fountain over like in this, you know, there's where the bathrooms are, the water fountains, just, you know, whatever. And I had such a lovely afternoon, just like, you know, reading through some magazines, reading through some books, being in an air conditioned space, having access to water. And it's just like, you know, those types of things. And then also to answer part of your question, there's been a boom in like the literal employment of like credentialed, qualified social workers inside libraries.
Whoa, really?
Yes. Because like libraries have always been social. They've always been and will continue to be a social service.
Yeah.
And I think that in the past, you know, 20, 30 years, there has been this recognition that people come to the library when they don't know where else to go and when they need help with various things.
Yeah.
And it has been a huge trend for like a while now to have, you know, in addition to your, you know, librarians and like library workers, to also have social workers, you know, to help people with, you know, whatever it is, housing, food insecurity, employment. Wow. Yeah.
That's amazing. That's really beautiful to hear that they're adapting. And like you said, that kind of like being able to be flexible with their cultural role, that's so beautiful. And like, I mean, I know very little about the history of libraries, but what's always fascinated me, we just went to a new library that was built probably like a year ago in our neighborhood.
Yes.
And we take our kids to the library like once a week usually. But we went to this one for the first time. And what always gets me is these buildings, they're like, they have the same feeling as like walking into a church or a cathedral. They have a very specific feeling to them. And it's something that I've always recognized. Like, there's something to the smell of it. There's something to just being around by that many books or something. I don't know, but there's it's a very special space. And do you feel that same way, like, when you're abroad, like our libraries that you've visited abroad? Like, is that universal, that feeling that that I've picked up on there?
Oh my God. Yeah. I have goosebumps the way that you just described that. I think absolutely yes. Like, I feel like universally libraries are regarded and are safe spaces. And literally some of them get, like, you know, they go through like training and qualification to be literal part of the safe space program that exists, like, in many states. But yeah, even internationally, I feel like there is that sense of just like comfort that comes with a library. The fact that, like, you know, there's no expectations. Mm-hmm. Like, the library does not expect anything from you.
Yeah, that's huge. Yeah. I've actually never thought about that aspect. And then, so one of the things that I love about doing this podcast, I've done about like over 50 of these interview things, and there's these threads of consistent topics or themes that pop up. And one of the big ones is when I'm talking to people about how they get into weird stuff and the paranormal. Libraries play such a huge role for a certain generation of people that found, like, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, or before that, the, like, world, or like the different types of books you find in the library that lead you down those rabbit holes, right? So that's always been interesting to me, and I've always equated it to being like you're finding something really weird, and it's on the same shelves or in the same room as like these historical books of nonfiction. And it kind of lends a weight of authenticity more than just seeing something on TV or hearing something from your family, or it gives it this air of realness or something. And I think, like, there's something more that you just hit on, that, like, you're in this space where, like, nobody's expecting you to discover this. No one's expecting you to, like, think one way, and it gives you that openness to enter that portal of weirdness. And, like, that's such a beautiful way of looking at it that I never thought about before.
Oh gosh. I love how you just said that, portal of weirdness. Libraries really are. And you're so right. Like, there are so many people who have had, when they talk about their paranormal interest, like, origin story, like, so often it's because they, like, read something, and a lot of times that, you know, reading that thing has occurred in a library. Or, I remember, like, probably like so many of us weirdos, like, just having a lifelong interest in general in, like, weird stuff. And I just happened to be a librarian, and I remember reading, I can't remember what book it was, but it was a book about, like, the haunted UK. And so I remember, like, one of the first cryptids that I ever heard about was the Loch Ness Monster.
Amazing.
And I was like, yes. I was like, this is so cool. This is, yeah, I don't know. And I love how you said that, portal of weirdness.
I love that you bring up the Loch Ness Monster. That's also a very big staple. Like, so many people got into weirdness through the Loch Ness Monster. And it's such a beautiful gateway because it ties that, like, childhood dinosaur fascination to, like, this unknown. And then you learn about all the weirdness that surrounds the Loch as you get into it, with, like, Aleister Crowley living on there. And then, like, I don't know if you've ever heard of Doc Shields, who my friend AP told me about, but he's a guy that essentially was a self-proclaimed wizard that did a lot of photographing and summoning of the Loch Ness Monster. So much good, just high strangeness and weird stuff around Loch Ness. Did you get to see that in action as a public librarian? Like, did you get to see people discover those little rabbit holes, whether it was the paranormal or other stuff? Like, what was that like, being on the other side of the counter of those experiences?
Oh my gosh. Yes. I love all these questions. Okay. Yes, I did see that. I love it. Let me just preface this. I love it when people come up with, like, needing help with anything that they're looking for, but especially when it's weird. and I really want people to hear that, though, because library anxiety is a very real thing. Like, to me, it's like, it is a vulnerable thing to walk up to a desk where somebody is and say that you need help. Like, A, that's a vulnerable thing. And I feel like it's even more so when it's about like these quote weird topics and like paranormal topics, right? And so I don't know anybody like who, any librarian who would just be like, oh my God, no, I'm not gonna, that is so dumb. Why would, no, like we love these questions. And like, for me, the weirder, the better. And I feel like for most librarians too, like we're not judging the merit of like your question when you come up to us. It's always just like, yes, challenge accepted. We will make this happen. And for me, it's also as a person who's personally interested in these topics, it's always great because I'm like, yes, you're one of us, you know, and like selfishly, yeah, I'm like, oh, I want to have a conversation with this person about like, what's your experience been? I can tell you, especially when I was working at the public library, people would come in and they would say like, I've got weird stuff happening at my house. Wow. Can you help me, you know, dig through the local history room? Like, can you show me how can I find information about like my house, the property, newspapers, whatever? I always loved those questions, especially.
That's amazing. I would never even think of going to the library. That makes so much sense though. That, again, another public service you wouldn't even associate with a library. I love that.
Yeah. You know, and I just, and also too, people who were just like, oh, I'm really interested, you know, do you have books about ghosts? Do you have books about cryptids? Do you have books about aliens? And it's like, yes, we have all of it, you know, and part of how that has translated here to the university, students will approach the desk and, you know, they're just, because it's in like a university setting doesn't mean that like the interest isn't there. Like that's such, you know, students will come up and say, I'm really interested in researching, like, I want to research about ghosts, or I want to research about extrasensory perception. But what I started to notice is that they would preface that by saying, you're probably going to think I'm crazy, but this is what I'm interested in. Or they'll say things like, there's probably no credible information about this, so can you just help me find another topic? And I'm like, no, like,
let's look at this.
Yes. I'm like, A, it's not crazy. You are not crazy for having an interest in whatever it is that you're interested in. And B, there is a very long history of really cool, creative people from all walks of lives, including scholars, scientists, explorers, like researching these things. Like, yeah. I feel like it's a fundamental question of life.
Well, at the core of all of it, whether it's like parapsychology or whether it's ghosts or whether it's they're asking big questions. They're looking at their place in the universe. They might not know that that's what they're doing right then. They may not like be recognizing that, but what they're doing is they're on a path to ask that, like, what the fuck are we all doing in this weird little blue ball soaring through the space? You know, like that's what I love about the paranormal and the weirdos and stuff like that. And that was good. Like, how much of that are you able to be open within academia, with like your students and your coworkers and stuff? Is it a pretty safe space in that regards? Excuse me.
It is a pretty safe space. But again, asterisk. I have never felt compelled to conceal that part of like my interest, since, you know, working here at the university, but I also realize that some people, that's not a choice that some people might make in the academy setting. I have always felt empowered and pretty safe here at my institution, but I'm sort of gonna, you know, I think it relates to that question, that thing that we were talking about at the beginning about how other people, I know that it gets, but also like, this is like with any research field or discipline in the academy, like it can get very cutthroat. It can get very divisive. It can get very just nasty. And I know definitely that there are people who, you know, scholars who are in the academy who actively do like parapsychological research, you know, who do get like sort of targeted or blacklisted or like, you know, just in general made fun of or, you know, whatever. So I know that my experience is not universal. So I want to be clear about that. But I also want to be clear that I feel like at my institution, I have felt very supported. And so I always want to encourage, like, I want to encourage people to like give people the opportunities to surprise you. Like, because it's also a stereotype to assume that just because you're like a professor or somebody like in a university that you're not going to be interested in these things.
Absolutely.
Or that you're not going to be open to it. But here, I will tell you a funny story.
Well, I like it.
Okay. The one time that like somebody did like say something, and it wasn't even like directly to me because it was like on the library's like social media, which I just happened to manage. I had made a post about like a throwback post about how Dr. Jeff Meldrum once came to campus. Mm-hmm. And gave a lecture on relict hominids, you know?
Yeah. Love it.
And somebody, some like a professor, commented on that post and they were like, "How embarrassing." And I like sat there and I was like stewing on it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, how do I want to respond? So I was like, so I responded and I was like, you know what's actually embarrassing? the fact that closed-mindedness exists in institutions that are literally built for creative yes. thinking and inquiry. And I went a little bit further and I was like, if you think this is interesting or embarrassing, then you'll probably find it super embarrassing that in the 90s, MIT, with the help of Harvard psychiatrists, held an entire fucking conference about alien abductions. I was like, I was
good.
Like, how about that? I will throw MIT and Harvard and all these credentialed people in your faces. And then at the end of the post, I was like, by the way, if you want to check out a book about that, here's the entry.
Yes, yes. Referenced and done. That's beautiful. No, those being able to cite those things is so key at certain points. It's why I really click with certain people that talk about these topics. One of my favorites is Mitch Horowitz. He's one of my favorite writers about the occult and esoteric and everything. And he references so many really, really valid studied like university institute, like double peer tested, all the stuff. And he'll wait, like the study will be done in like 2011 and he'll wait until like 2021 to talk about it. He'll give like 10 years for it to be like debunked and then he'll be able to cite all this stuff. But one of my favorite things he says in those regards is he tells the story of being at a dinner with a bunch of, I think he called them like, it was a combination of like stock bros and academics, like a bunch of people that just non-believers all the way. And he's a like self-proclaimed Satanist who writes on all of these topics. So like, he's just talking to them like he talks to everybody and they're all telling him about how it's all BS and none of it's true. And he's like, all right, I dare any of you to go in the bathroom right now, stare in the mirror with the lights out and say Bloody Mary three times and no one would do it. Like everybody has these like beliefs and fears and like it's in everybody. And I think it's so funny to be able to call people out in both the way that you did where you're citing historical accurate information being like, well, people, but also being like, if you actually talked to that dude one-on-one and asked him to like go in the bathroom and play Bloody Mary, he'd probably be like, no, I'm cool. I don't need to do that because like, inside we know there's weird stuff out there and we don't want to tempt fate. Like even the most skeptical person knows that like there's stuff out there they don't know about and like it could come. Yeah, so I love that. That's beautiful.
I like that example too, and I feel like you know there to me it's like there's a difference between like if you disagree about like, you know, just like in general, like disagree about, you know, what a ghostly experience is or what ESP is or whatever. Or even if you just kind of a person, you know, generally thinks like, oh, well, you know, we should be spending more time focusing on this study or whatever. Like, okay, you're entitled to your opinion. That's not very, that's not too problematic to me. Like, people are entitled to like and not like what they want. But the difference is when you're actively like, you know, sort of making fun of and, you know, loudly sort of just like, you know, poo-pooing the very hard work and the very credible work of, you know, creative, like intelligent people, then it's like, okay, this is where we get into problematic areas, or mm-hmm. where, when people are maybe kept from, you know, being offered opportunities or jobs because, like, do you know they like research extrasensory perception? Yeah. Like, what a fucking weirdo.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah.
It's definitely, yeah. That is, and it's the mark of people not being secure in their own worldviews to me, but that doesn't make it less problematic. It's so funny because I don't participate in arguments and things like that, but I see them happen all the time. And I'm like, oh, this is are very insecure. Like, to me, especially with like the paranormal, like it's a all of it and things we haven't even thought of situation. Like, it's everything's true from flesh and blood to not flesh and blood, nuts and bolts to consciousness. Like, as like I said before, my whole thing is this is meant to make people live a more like creative and wonder induced life. Like, this is meant to have people look around and be like, oh, we live in a magical place. Like, that's what it is for me. So like, whatever gets you there is cool. Like, but I find the more intelligent, or the people that I shouldn't say more intelligent, the people that I resonate more with have a very flexible worldview, and like their reality tunnels shift a lot. And I was lucky to kind of come up on Robert Anton Wilson's work, and he has a bunch of stuff like this as far as like keeping, you know, maintaining agnosticism at all regards, like never claiming that you know what's going on. And he created this whole language where he removed things that like you can't use definite words. Like, instead of saying the sky is blue, you would say the sky appears blue. There's no is. He takes all the is and isms out of it. And when you look at it, it's more accurate because the sky is not blue. The sky just appears blue to us because of the way we see light and all that stuff. So like, when you see the world through that more like flexible lens, you actually get closer to the real truth, whether it's scientific or philosophical or whatever you want to look at. So I like things like that kind of just allow you to look at this stuff differently. So that, like, what got you mentioned earlier that you've been a lifelong weirdo. You've been into this stuff since you can remember. Is there any specific point that was like, I'm going to start writing about this? Because I know you've written books, you research stuff all the time. Like, what point was it that shifted where you're like, okay, I'm not just a passive weirdo. I need to like put my stuff out there.
Yes. Okay. This is a good question, and it's kind of a funny story. So when I started working here at the university library in 2015, like I mentioned, students would, you know, approach me and ask about help researching like strange, weird, anomalous, paranormal topics. And they would either say, you're probably going to think I'm crazy, but, or there's probably no credible stuff out there. So can you just, and I started to think like, that's unfortunate that anybody should feel that way. And it's unfortunate that people don't like realize that there is this long history of really cool, credible, creative inquiry. And then I was like, wait a minute, I'm a librarian. How can I, you know, I was like, how can I help like mitigate this? Like, how can I help tell like that long history? How can I be a part of telling that long history? And in the process, which was more important for me, make people like me, weirdos like me in the academy, or in general, you know that like you belong here, like your curiosity is valid, you know, especially if you're in the university, it's valid, you belong here. And just help people not feel out of place, because so many systems in our world are very othering.
Yes.
You know, and like, the Academy, you know, is another system, and it can make people feel very other than. And so my goal also too, the funny part of this is that back in like 2018, like the middle to end of 2018, I was having just like some really intense, just like burnout, and just stuff going on. And I remember thinking to myself, like, how can I, like, what can I do to kind of like pull myself out of this? And I remember thinking, like, wouldn't it be so great if I could just write about the weird and the paranormal, like, you know, and have it be like in the guise of under the umbrella of information literacy and what I do as a librarian. And I had seen an email come through a listserv from a publisher asking for ideas for their next round of reference titles. And I remember thinking, like, kind of flippantly, I was like, oh, wouldn't it be great if I could just, you know, write a whole book about, yeah, I'll do a reference book about the history of credible inquiry into the scholarly inquiry into the paranormal. And I like put like a small paragraph together and just sent it off, like totally thinking that whoever got it was just going to be like, oh my God, like this person is so weird. But instead they emailed back and they were like, tell us more.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. So that's how my first book came about. And then because I built up that relationship with my publisher, that's how my second book came about. And it's also a good reminder for me, I think, to again, give people the opportunity to surprise us. And also to just like shoot your shot.
Yeah. Surprise yourself too, you know, like taking the chance on yourself to send that email. Like, I know that feeling of like hitting the send and being like, don't know what that's going to happen. Like, what, as somebody who has grown up and like have such a passion for books, Avi, like what was it like to hold your work in your hands as like a physical book for the first time? Like, what, what did that feel like? Like, I can't imagine.
Unreal. Like, I mean, honestly, it felt a little like, it felt like a little dissociative almost, because you're like, wait a minute, here's this thing. Probably, and I'm curious maybe how it echoes you as well, like as somebody who has such a passion and creates things that like you can hold like in your hands, like it's such a cool feeling, I think, like you said, to know like, wow, like I look at this thing that I did, like I can like do things. This is pretty cool. It's very humbling. And I won't go so far as to say like out of body, but it's a bit dissociative.
it's as much as a magical or mystical experience as anything. Like, you literally, like, yeah, no, I've had that feeling. It's why I make anything. Like, I had that feeling the first time I ever silkscreened my first t-shirt, where it was a blank t-shirt and you push the ink through and then it's not, and it's like, oh, that's all. The same thing you feel when you first get the white piece of paper and you make it not a white piece of paper. And like, there's something magical about that. Or I guess this highlights how magical everything is underlying us that we don't even think about. Like, a book is literally abstract thoughts and ideas manifest. Like, it is being pulled from the other or the elsewhere as somewhere else, and it's put down on paper and made physical. And that is a esoteric act. I'd go as far as saying that artists and writers and creators are the like true magicians of the world and always have been. Like, there's this parallel between creativity and esoteric or spirituality or paranormal. There's this creative thread. Like, again, that's one of the threads I've noticed in either listening to the tons of podcasts I've listened to or the people I've talked to via this podcast, is there's so many artists that are involved, whether it's experiencers or researchers or all. And even if they don't lead with that, like I think of Tenny all the time, like he's one of the best artists out there. He never talks about it, but he's like, he makes stuff all the time. He lives, his whole life is an art project, you know, like my favorite yeah. people live as if their life is an art project. Like David Lynch is a great example. Like you never have to watch a David Lynch movie. Like he has made his impact on the world just by being who he is and living the way he lives and talking the way he talks. Same thing with Tenny or like all these people. And I think that that is, we forget that we are meant to create. Like, I think that that's what we're here to do, is to make stuff. And like holding that physical representation of you made it, like that's got it. Like I relate to that amazing. It's religious to me. It's like, it's spiritual, ontological shock, whatever you want to call it. Like it's that, it's really interesting to me how much, like, I wish everybody could experience that. Like everybody, like I talk to is low, or so many people I talk to are always like, I can't do what you do. I could never be an artist. Or I'm like, no, you are an artist. Like you can do this. Like you can make your own comics. You can make your own, like, and I wish everybody could just have that feeling for a minute of being like, this didn't exist and now it exists in my hands. And yes. I think people would live a more fulfilled life or something along those lines.
Yes. Oh, everything. Yes. That you just said. And I feel like, you know, also too, since you, you know, mentioned Tenny, like just, you know, paying homage to like my use of the word weirdo and like how, you know, how encouraging he is of being like, you know, this is what I call, you know, I call people weirdos and this is what it means. And,
yep.
And, I sort of, yeah. And like, also just what a kind, supportive person that's out there. Encouraging, like you in this conversation, like encouraging people to just be, embrace that, you know, recognize that it's valid, that they're valid. And yeah, I mean, I'd
be doing this podcast yeah. without him. Like he's like a, right. having him on a couple weeks ago was, you know, so good, dream come true. So amazing to talk to him. And like, just, he is a big part of why I dove deeper into the community and things like that. So, yeah. And again, like started me down so many other, like I've always been interested in linguistics, and his rap about weirdos and stuff like that is one of my favorite linguistic examples of things. And like I grew up on like Terrence McKenna and stuff like that. So I've always had an interest in how language plays a part of everything and in ways that yeah. we don't even recognize, you know? So I love finding the weirdness like that is always my favorite.
Oh my gosh. I have a little bit of a funny story about Tenny. So this was, I can't remember what year it was, but I think it was like a Scarefest convention in Kentucky. And Tenny was there and he was selling these little magnets that he like drew. And there was like a little tiny like Bigfoot magnet or whatever. And like I was at his table and like, you know, I'd heard about him and I was like, okay, I want to go check this table out, see this guy. And he had these little Bigfoot magnets and they were like so cute. And I was like, how much, you know, are these? And he was like, oh, just whatever you want to donate, you know? And I was like, oh my God. And it was like cash only. And I was like, okay. So like I pulled out, you know, my wallet and I'd already like sort of like stopped by a couple tables, you know, and stuff. And I only had like $5 left and I was so thirsty and like, I didn't have a water bottle or like anything. And I was like, oh my God, I need $2 to get like a bottle of water. So I like gave him like $3 and I always felt bad about that. I feel so bad.
That's amazing. That is my favorite as far as his not caring. That's a great representation of his not caring about financial things in a good way. Like I know there's plenty of negatives that come from that type of living life that way that I've experienced myself, but that's beautiful. And like giving what you can is always more important than giving a lot. Like, you know, that's one of those lessons that I think Jesus hit on the head. Like, well, you know, he got that one right as far as like, you know, yeah. if you give a little, but that's all you have to give, that means more than someone who's got a ton that just gives, like, you know, things that mean nothing. So that's beautiful. Yeah. I love that.
I always felt bad about that. And then it was mitigated by and then like, you know, a few years later, like Patreon became a thing and I was like, oh, okay. I was like, I'm gonna make up for the $3 I gave you for your piece of art.
See, it all comes full circle. It all comes full circle. That's awesome. That's beautiful. So to go, are you working on anything now, creative writing wise, or anything, any fun projects you want to talk about or can talk about? Or
ooh, yes. I am working on, I was invited to submit a couple of articles, to a journal about, just kind of highlighting like biographies of various people that are, often, you know, either overlooked or not as often talked about in the history of, parapsychology. So I'm kind of working on that. I am also something that I'm so excited about. I was eligible to take a sabbatical last year, and I used my time to visit Duke University and access the archives of the parapsychology archives.
Yay.
And oh my God, I specifically was interested in the life of a parapsychological researcher and librarian and author and just mystic. I mean, her name is Rhea White. And I was super interested in her because she was a librarian just like me. She wrote bibliographic resources about parapsychology, which is very similar to like the books that I write. And for those reasons, I was like super interested in learning more about her and in general, learning more about the women affiliated with the Duke Parapsychology Labs. And while I was there, I found these beautiful letters that Rhea had written, to one of her co-researchers. And it became very clear that they were love letters.
So cool.
And I know. And I just became even more obsessed with her life and learning more about her. And I have continued doing that research. And so far I have talked to 3 people who knew her in real life. And I'm getting ready to talk to the 4th person in August. And I have been able to gather like more of her writings, like, and it just, I don't know what like this is going to result in. But I'm so excited to be researching her and eventually get to the point of being able to share that, her life and her writings with other people, because not only was she just a cool person, the way that she writes is fucking mystical. Like,
wow.
She captures what you were talking about earlier. She embodies and captures just the magical mindset.
That's so cool. What was her like main project, like what was her writings about as far as her research and everything, if you don't mind talking about it a little bit?
Oh, I don't mind at all. So she started out in the Duke Parapsychology Labs doing research into extrasensory perception with school children. And that's sort of like her sort of start with the labs. But one of the things that she's like super well known for is her theory about exceptional human experiences.
Because, I love the sound of this.
I know. I'm telling you, you would dig it. Okay. So she started to become a little disillusioned by during that time period, like, you know, the 50s, like 60s. When she was like engaging in like the research in the laboratory, started to be a little disillusioned by people not really digging into the subjective experience of what does it mean to be a human being who has had something anomalous or paranormal happen to them. And it's not that she was like disregarding or poo-pooing, like, you know, the validity of clinical laboratory studies like that. You know, she recognized that has value too, but I think was just like a little disappointed that she wasn't also seeing, you know, these like studies into, you know, like the human experience.
Yeah, no, that's, it parallels to this day, like some things that don't get emphasized enough with anomalous experiences and stuff, but continue.
Oh yeah. So she, you know, developed this whole framework, that she called the exceptional human experience. And, I mean, just sort of, you know, had all sorts of, outlines for like, what does that mean? What does it mean to have an exceptional human experience? And the crux of it is that you are a human being who has, you know, experienced an anomalous event, but taking that further, and that anomalous event has fundamentally changed your worldview.
Yes. Wow. And she was writing about this in the 50s and 60s, you said? This was, she was doing this work?
I think that she was like thinking about it then. The crux of her actual writings on that came out in the 90s. I think that she was, the seeds of that were planted during her time.
So cool.
Yeah, like in the laboratory. And then I think she had like sort of taken a break from parapsychology in like the 70s there for a little while, came back to it. And, you know, it's also really awesome because she includes an exceptional human experience, like in her writings, can also be something like falling in love.
Yes.
Or
beautiful.
You know, deja vu, or all sorts. You know, it doesn't have to just be these like really like out there like experiences. Yes. Like, you know, yeah.
No, there's man, I'm going to forget the phrase now, and I just heard somebody talk about it, but it's something about like all being inspired into a state of awe through aesthetics. And like, there's all of these ways to kind of reach that exceptional experience. And I think that's what like, that's what makes this stuff so interesting to me, is the ties between, people can have that, like whether it's a UFO, alien abduction, this cryptid, they'll have these experiences that are almost seeming to be more than anything meant to inject this novelty into that person's life and to kind of shake them up a little bit. And it seems like how they integrate that stuff, and this is where I love the kind of parallels between psychedelics and a lot of this stuff, is it's all about like being opened up. Like when these people have these experiences, there's an opening that happens. And a lot of the time that opening is like translated or integrated via creative acts or spiritual, finding religion or finding community, or like these things that you can see happen when people get into psychedelics. There's an opening, a feeling of connection with more than just yourself in the universe. And usually that will integrate if it's done right, or not done right, but if it's done effectively, I guess maybe the right word. But usually that will integrate into a person that's more open and kind and wants to be a part of an environment and community. And like, those parallels are so beautiful. I'm super interested in this person's work now. What was her name again? I'm sorry. I'm going to.
No, that's okay. Rhea White. R-H-E-A. Rhea White.
Rhea White. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I just, yeah, everything that you just said. And I feel like she, embodies, like she had such a magical outlook on life, and it was really important for her to cap, like what she was doing was capturing people's stories, you know, like
absolutely,
like what you're doing here, you know, and talking to the people that you talk to, and I just, she, I just totally think that, like, I just think all the time about like, sometimes I'm listening to a podcast and I'm like, oh my God, Rhea would have loved this.
Absolutely. And it makes me wish that people could, I mean, like, that makes me think of things as far as academics or academia being more accepting of this stuff, like the stuff that's going on at Rice University with the Archives of the Anomalous and like Jeffrey Kripal's work and stuff like that. Like, if people like that could have saw that being like highlighted and like what they're doing there, it seems like there is a new narrative coming along. And like, even like Mitch Horowitz, who I referenced earlier, like one of his favorite examples is Daryl Bem, who was also a part of Duke University and had a whole thing about essentially like, we can impact the present and the future by reflecting on what we've done in the past, and like has one of the most like rigorous studies, those meta-analyses. He built this whole software so people could come in and try and debunk it, and he waited like 10 years to write about it, and no one's been able to debunk it. And now it's lining up with what like those dudes that just got the Nobel Peace Prize or Nobel prize for essentially proving that time's not local or linear. Like, essentially they won this giant prize saying that, yeah, time is fake, and like, we all have been saying this forever, but it's true, time's fake, and like, we can impact the past and the future all from how we're living now. And like, I love when those threads kind of tie up nicely. And it seems like, I've always noticed, and I think you'll appreciate this as a librarian, mythology and stories and folklore seem to arrive at scientific truths before material science ever does. And if we would take the fiction as a little bit more, like whether it's like Philip K. Dick tapping into things, or like all of these examples of like fiction predicting things that come to, for like, I think we need to take our mythology more seriously, and our imaginations, like our imaginations are the most powerful tool and like everything to me. And like, I don't think we kind of take that seriously. Like, forever, I'm so conscious about this with my kids, like growing up, like they're like, oh, you're just over imaginative, you just have too much, your imagination's running away with you. And it's like, that's what they're meant to do. That's their superpower. That's our superpower. Like, yes, imagination, run away, please. Like, so yeah, I love that kind of, it's those things, these like science, like these people that are doing at Duke University and all this, lines up with things that we've known in our fiction and our mythology for years, it seems like.
Yes, I love that. That is such a cool observation. And it really does make you wonder about like the inherent magic that is inside of us, and how inherent like the weirdness is to just like living in a fucking human body. I mean, I don't know.
No, I think that's our superpower. I referenced Douglas Rushkoff earlier to you. I don't know if we're recording or not, but I use this quote from him all the time. And he says that like humans, the superpower of being humans is our squishiness. It's our dichotomy. It's the fact that we are walking paradoxes. It's the fact that we can enjoy a David Lynch movie. We can watch a janitor mopping a hallway with no other context and know it's beautiful because Lynch composed it this way. And like, the AI is never going to be able to enjoy that. There's this liminality that humans exist in, and it's this push and pull. We are material beings of a spiritual world, and it's the mix of the two that makes us special. And I think that's what I love the most about all this stuff, is we get back to like, it's all about, and I'm a big comic book guy. I love Alan Moore and his talking about the idea space, and how like what we do is we use linear time to pull ideas from no time space, from the space where time doesn't exist. And once we pull those ideas into linear time, they become real, and then we can use time to interact with them. And I think there's something to that. Like, I love that. It makes me feel good.
I love that. And as you were talking, it reminded me of like, it's the very same feeling that I get when like I dig into like historic newspapers, or, you know, writings of people, you know, like, you know, 100 or more years ago, and you see, you know, finding like a newspaper article from somebody who, you know, maybe had a strange experience that mimics very closely like your own, or are things that you still hear people experiencing and talking about. It's just like, these are threads, like the anomalous is a thread that connects everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's just a lot of implication to that thought.
I love it. And I love those thoughts because, again, they just bring you back to that, like, I call them like high school stoner ideas, where like it allows you to sit in the space where you don't know what's going on. And there's something beautiful to that. I always think about that time, like when you're a kid and you look up at the sky and it sinks in for the first time that like that is forever and vast. And it almost makes you sick to your stomach a little bit. You're like, oh, yes. This is. But like that, I chase that feeling. Like, that's what this stuff is about. Like, having those thoughts leads me. It's the only way I can get back to that feeling in a certain way, you know. But yeah. Well, listen, I've kept you for about an hour and I know you're at work right now, so I don't want to take up too much time, but I'd love to do this again. Like, I'd absolutely would. I think we could talk another hour here easily.
I have had so much fun. I would absolutely, you know, love to do this again. It's always so great connecting with, you know, people who also have like that sort of magical mindset, and yeah, it's refreshing.
It's always nice. We didn't talk at all before doing this podcast, really, but it's nice because we can skip over. Like, I feel like I can just talk how I would normally want to talk to people. Like, you can skip the whole small talk and catching up and all that and just get right into the, I've used this quote a million times on my podcast, but one of my favorite authors, Mike Clelland, says, if you're talking about UFOs or the paranormal and you don't get to the meaning of life and what happens after you die within 5 minutes, you're doing it wrong. I'm like, yes. Yeah, I think there's something to that. Like,
yes. Oh my God, that is so good. I love that.
Yeah. Well, to wrap things up here, tell people where to find your books, where to follow you, or anything else you'd like to share with everybody, and I'll make sure I link it all below.
Oh, cool. Thank you. I am most active on Instagram. If people want to follow me there, they can find me at Liminal Librarian on Instagram. If you want to read my books, ask your library to get a copy for you. Because, you know, I feel like a lot of people don't realize they can like ask their library, like they can request, they can put in recommendations and requests, and the library will, you know, hopefully buy that copy for you. So like your authors still get, you know, credited, and you save your money and spend it on things that, you know, like spend it on, you know, food or, you know, rent or just the cost of being a human in this world. And that is how I encourage people to get my books.
And then it's there for the community. Everybody else can, there's one more weirdo book in the lot. That's great.
there's one more weirdo book in the lodge. And also too, it's like, you know, people are savvy enough that if they want to purchase a copy of my book, it's out there. They know how to find it. And like, I'll send you like the link and a discount code, but I never like to lead with that because I think it's like, as a librarian, of course, like I it's such an amazing feeling, like selfishly, to sort of see my book like in a library, but more importantly, books, the ability to buy books is a fucking privilege. And
true.
Books are expensive.
Yeah.
And even if you do have the disposable income to buy a book, like you don't have the ability to buy everything that you would ever want ever. And like you said, it makes it so that the next weirdo in line can find it. And also in terms of like referencey books like mine, if you ask your library to get it and you like use that as a way to preview whether you actually want to like own that for yourself. Hey, that's a perfect way to do it.
That's beautiful. I love that. Well, thank you so much for doing this, Courtney. This was so much fun. And yeah, I'm so glad we connected. I feel like I have a new friend and I can't wait to talk more.
Likewise. Thank you so much.
No problem. Have a good one.
You too.